Okay, good morning, everyone. It is Thursday, December 20th, and it's 10 a.m., and it's time for another weekly edition of the Weekly In Rumor Teleconference. And this is Henry Harris, and welcome to the call. I'm going to take a moment to make a brief pitch, and that is, if you are interested in supporting the work of the Jewish Center for Wellbeing, which is this nonprofit, you are invited to visit us online and make a donation there, or you can send a check to Jewish Center for Wellbeing to 17 Tennyson Place, Passaic, New Jersey, 07055. I try to make our offerings either subsidized or free, and your help makes the difference. Okay, so today we're joining a conversation about Emunah, and as is our custom, we're going to recap the basic goal of this call, and then we're going to get into today's topic, which is the topic of personal test and the inside-out understanding. So I was looking at the nature of this call again this morning as I was anticipating getting on, and it occurs to me one way of describing this call is that we are interested in directing ourselves to value the goal of truth over the value of feelings, meaning we're truth seekers rather than feeling seekers. What do I mean by that? Our feelings are things that are being created in this moment through a single force that is beyond our control. The divine source of all life is sourcing everything, including my experience of this moment. Each one of us in this moment, whether you're on this call live or if you're listening to the recording, you're having an experience of life. It might not be obvious to you what that experience is. It might just be kind of neutral. But you're having an experience, and throughout your day you're having experiences. You might feel impatient. You might feel warm. You might feel uplifted. You might feel stressed. Whatever it is, the experience that you're having in the moment that you're having it is... Well, good morning. This is Take 2. This is Henry Harris. It's Thursday, December 20th, 10 a.m., another installment of the Weekly Emunah Teleconference. I'm going to begin this week's session with an invite for those who are interested to have the merit of supporting this learning experience to contribute to our nonprofit. You're invited to do so online at jewishcenterforwellbeing.com. Alternatively, you can mail a check to 17 Tennyson Place, Passaic, New Jersey, 07055. We thank you for your support. So this week we're going to introduce, as we customarily do, with a summary of what this call is about, and then we're going to proceed into today's topic, which is Nisyonot, tests, personal tests, and the inside-out understanding. So I want to look at today's, at the summary of today's call as the goal of seeking truth, the goal of seeking truth as opposed to the goal of seeking a feeling. What is that? What do I mean by that? So as I was alluding to, everyone who's on this call right now, whether you're listening live, whether you're listening to the recording, you're having an experience of life. You're having an experience of life in this moment, and you will have a variety of experiences throughout your day. Those experiences might feel kind of neutral. They might feel inspired. They might feel pressured or stressed. Whatever the feeling is, wherever it is that you're having it, it's valuable to understand that that experience is being fashioned, it's being shaped in that very moment through one mean and one way and one way only, and that's the gift of divine thought. There is a flow of energy coming from the formless energy behind life, and it is showing up in our experience in through this gift of thought that we can have an actual experience of. And that formless energy that shows up as thought in our heart, in our experience, that's what's accounting for our actual experience of life in a given moment. And I'm not on the, I don't have the ability to manage, avoid, resist, or change my experience per se, but what I can do, what I am capable of, and this is actually my job, is to know what's true about that experience. And that's what I mean by saying this call is about looking in It's about shifting our focus away from seeking a feeling towards seeking the truth. If I'm interested in seeking the truth, then I'm free to have any variety of feelings that there are, because I'm aware of the futility of trying to manage, control, resist, change a feeling, and I'm appreciative of the value of the ability to see what's true about it. And lo and behold, I'm well suited for that job. As we've talked on, as we mentioned last week, Hakol b'yidei shamayim chutz m'yirah shamayim, everything is in the hands of God, except the choice to acknowledge that everything is from God. So I don't have my feelings and my thoughts and the flow of experience that I'm having is very much coming from the inside out, from the divine. But I have the ability to notice that. I have the ability to acknowledge that. And the value of truth is precious, whether the truth is pointing to the to what's behind a rotten feeling, or the truth is pointing to what's behind a nice and inspired feeling. Either way, truth is precious. Truth is extraordinarily valuable. And guess what? That is the job I'm most suited for. The job of acknowledging what's true is the job that I'm most suited for. I am not well suited for the job of preferring a feeling of trying to run away from a feeling or change a feeling. I'm just not well suited for that job. And ironically, it ends up energizing the feeling of futility and discomfort and frustration. The job of seeking the truth is one that I'm very well suited for. And lo and behold, as I look away from looking for seeking a feeling towards seeking truth, I settle down. I disengage from impossible and false illusory constructs. I disengage from confusion. And the beautiful inherent wisdom that is already present inside of me becomes unencumbered. It becomes liberated, and it surfaces. It's present in my life in a way that it is truly available to me. That's what this call is about, is understanding the truth about our experience, understanding the impossibility of trying to change or manage our experience, but yet the beauty and the incredible value and effectiveness of sticking with the job of seeking, of being a truth seeker, not a feeling seeker. So that's my intro. And now I want to look at the topic of personal tests, of nisyonot. And let's talk a little bit about this idea of tests. First of all, it's valuable to consider that tests are considered a central part of our experience of our mission in this world. The Mesillas Yesharim, the Ramchal writes in The Path of the Just, which is basically the most widely acknowledged and accepted work of character development written in the last several centuries. He writes that the job of a Jew in this world is basically threefold. It's to serve the Creator, it's to fulfill commandments, and it's to be with the test, it's to pass the test that the Almighty sends our ways. Tests are a central part of our job in this world, of our whole existence. Elsewhere, it's written when God tells Abraham, "Hisalech lefanai veheyeh somim," walk before me and be whole, be complete. The Midrash says about that, "Hisalech lefanai," grab on to, cling to my service, "veheyeh somim," and be complete means be complete with or be at peace with my nisyonos, with the tests that I send your way. So tests are 100% central to our mission in this world. So what is a test? Here's my understanding of a test. A test is where a person, and in the context of our conversation, you'll see how central the inside-out understanding is. A test is when a person is standing in an experience of life and is not able to perceive the truth about his experience, meaning he's not able to see the inside-out nature. He is possessed by, he's convinced of, he is consumed by a perception of the illusion of an outside-in experience. He is absolutely gripped by the perception that he's having an experience of something in the world that is affecting, that's causing his experience. And as a result, he can't help but feel struggle, pain, the desire to run away. That is the nature of a test. So a test is, and here's what's interesting, is that a test is not an unpleasant or difficult experience in and of itself. In fact, we've discussed this many times, that having painful experiences, having unwanted thoughts or feeling, isn't by definition a test. Obviously, there's levels of tests. There's a spectrum of tests, but it's not the extreme test that I think of when I'm, you know, lost in a struggle. The experience of a painful having a painful experience, if a person has some understanding, has some insight, some level of insightful awareness about what's true about that painful experience, then he's having a certain, it's still a challenge. It's a lesser challenge than a full-blown test of, I'm standing in an experience and I am in just full-blown resentment, anger, struggle about the experience I'm having. And that is owing to the fact of misunderstanding. So let me give you an experience, okay? Let me give you a little bit of a scenario in which I see a personal test and where I've seen movement in a personal test. So I've spoken about it on a consistent basis. One of my children has a greater level of reactivity than his siblings and can become gripped by an angry, by anger. So much so that he just reacts, you know, he blows up. It could be expressed through physical violence. It could be expressed through just incredible display of anger and inappropriate behavior. And what is clear to me is that he is lost in a test in that moment. Why? Because if you tap into him, if you were to slow him down and ask him, what is going on? So he'll tell you, my siblings are completely and totally inappropriate. They're doing things that are just out and out inexcusable. Or my father is picking on me and he's making it impossible for me to live my life. Whatever it is that he'll say, he is lost in an outside-in experience. He's just completely gripped by the experience of outside-in. Now, what's interesting is, as the father in that experience, I've had my experience of being lost in a reactive outlook, in an outside-in outlook, of being lost in it, meaning just completely gripped as I'm encountering my child's eruption. I've had the experience of viewing it as I'm consumed by upset, consumed by a feeling of fearful, angry reactivity. And if you were to slow me down and ask me, what is going on? Like, why are you so gripped? My answer, if I had the self-awareness to reflect on it, my answer would be, my child is a complete and total problem, or I am completely and totally failing. It's something in my character or in my parenting or in my life that is just completely unworkable. And I can't handle it. I can't handle my own failure as a parent. I can't handle my child's lack of control, and therefore it's an emblem of my failure, and it's just completely unbearable. It looks to me that my failure, my child's behavior, all of those things are completely and totally accounting for my feeling, and I don't know where to go. I don't know where to be. I can't handle this feeling state because underlying it, of course, is the perception that I could and should be able to have a different feeling. I could and should be able to have a different experience. That's underlying every outside-in perception, is the mistaken belief that I could and should be able to do or act or feel differently. That would be an extreme example of a nisayon, of a test. So much so, all the way on the end of the spectrum of the test, that I don't even notice that I'm experiencing a test. It just looks completely and totally outside in. Now, what can happen, though, is that a person can then settle down, and this has certainly been my experience in that one dynamic, where a person can settle down and say, for the life of me, I do not know how from reacting to my child's behavior. I don't know what it looks like to be with him or to respond helpfully to him. I just seem to escalate and become reactive in my own way. And I don't know where and how to do. I don't know what to do about that, right? Like I'm troubled by it. I'm settling down a little bit from the intensity of my loss being lost, but I'm still looking at it as he and I are this toxic combination of circumstances, and I don't know how to fix the outside in. That would be an example of a test. Again, the test as I'm seeing it is the perception, the actual belief that my experience is coming from the outside in and feeling lost in it. So what we have an opportunity to do, owing to our understanding of the inside-out nature of our lives, is to be able to see what's true about the rotten feeling, to understand what's true about the feeling of helplessness. I feel helpless. I feel out of control in my ability to be present to or responsive to my child. But I know something about that. I know that feeling that I'm in, that I'm residing in, it's owing to the perceptions that are being made available to me in this moment. It's owing to the thought, the gift of divine thought, which is what I'm being allowed to see in this moment. I know something about my lack of perception. I know something about my lack of visibility. It's owing to the nature of divine thought. And I'm standing, it's painful. I'm standing in the painful feeling. But here's what happens as I begin to understand what's true about my nisayon. Here's what happens as I begin to understand what's true about my lack of understanding of the inside-out nature of life. Because remember, knowing intellectually, knowing as an idea, as a concept, that there's such a thing as inside-out, that doesn't make a difference in our feeling state in this moment, right? If you're talking about the pain of the nisayon, the pain of the nisayon is what you're experiencing in this moment's flow of divine thought. So we can know what we know as a concept about inside out, but that's not pointing to that's not what is accounting for our experience, our feeling experience in this moment. That's the gift of divine thought. And as I'm standing in that feeling experience, I might or might not see insightfully the truth of inside out. I might not. So even as I'm not seeing that insightfully, I still know that my lack of insight is coming from the truth behind all life and the truth behind all thought. And that's what I see what the Almighty sees me, and I see what I don't see as far as the Almighty shows me. So there I am. I'm standing in my angry feeling, but I have a glimpse. I have a glimpse of clarity that it's not owing to my failure as a parent. It's not owing to my child's problematic nature. It's owing to the lack of visibility that the Almighty is making available to me right now. It's the power of seeing as a woman, as we've described many times. It's the power of a woman seeing in the midst of a contraction, I'm in pain. I'm in a lot of pain. This contraction hurts. But I know something about what's true about contractions. Like, it's a divine process. I'm limited in the contraction, I'm not able to extract myself from the contraction. Why not? Why am I not able to extract myself from the contraction? Because that's what the Almighty is making known to me. That's what He's doing. It's not owing to my failure as a mother, or it's not owing to my being bad at birth. It's not owing to anything. It's owing to the Almighty is placing me in a contraction. The quintessential story of Nisayon was the Jewish people's stay in Mitzrayim, was the Jewish people's experience in Egypt. The Almighty placed us in Mitzrayim, and we didn't like it. It was uncomfortable. We wanted to leave. We didn't know how to leave. We couldn't get ourselves out. And there were Jews, as we've discussed in the past, there were Jews that chalked up their experience of pain to the circumstances of the great Egypt, the great civilization of Egypt. The reason why we suffer right now is because the power of Egypt is so overwhelming. No one has ever left Egypt before. That's why our suffering is the way it is. And then there were Jews that said, well, we're suffering, it hurts, but the reason we're suffering is because this is where the Almighty is placing us in this moment. This is what He is allowing us to experience in this moment. And at some point in the future, it can change and that could be in a moment, and that could be in 10 years. Because the only reason why I'm experiencing this moment of constriction is because He's causing that constriction. That is the opportunity of a Nisayon. And that that stance. So just to, let's just step back for a second. I'm angry. I'm upset looking at my child's behavior. But I know that anger and upset is itself divine thought. And I know that I'm not the author of divine thought. I know I'm not the manager of divine thought. The Almighty is showing me angry thinking right now. Just as He placed us in Mitzrayim, and He maintained the experience of Mitzrayim until He pulled us out of Mitzrayim, He will expose me to angry thought. And then at a certain point, He will allow me to move out of angry thought. The role I can play, which facilitates my role, is the clarity about what's true about that experience. That's what allows me not to get lost and to linger in the experience of the constriction, in the experience of the contraction. That's how the opportunity of a test presents itself, to be able to stand in the pain and to have a level of acceptance of the pain that comes from knowing. And I'm not talking about acceptance as in, oh, I feel good. I'm talking about the ability to just simply stand there and to know what's true about the pain. And as we look there, guess what? We become participants in the value of the test. We become partners in the value of the test. And then the divine shows up as a new thought. And we're ready and willing and able to experience that new thought, because we haven't gotten lost. We haven't camped out in the circumstance of our child's problematic qualities, in the circumstance of my failure as a parent. We haven't camped out there. We've held ourselves in place looking for the divine. So that's a little longer than I intended to go, so I'm going to pause and see if there's something that's what are you hearing or seeing? Is there a question or a comment on what we're seeing, on what we're discussing?
Hello?
Yeah. Yeah, someone
Hello?
There?
Yes, yeah. Melissa. Hi.
Oh, hi.
You can hear me? Hi.
I can hear you.
Okay, good. Okay, so this is my question based on what you were saying. So we're in a test, and the way I understand thought is Hashem has to give me a thought. In other words, I can't generate the thinking. So He would have to give me the thought, which A, says I'm in a test, so that I know. Because if He doesn't give me that thought, I'm not going to know I'm in a test, because He has to let me in on the secret. Now, so now he lets me in the test. And then he gives me another thought of despair and blah, blah, blah. And then in the middle of that, he gives me finally a thought of, oh, it's my thinking. And it's a test. And great. So he gives me this insight. And for a second, I feel better. But then he puts me back into the old thoughts of, oh, my God, but I can't handle and this is too hard and blah, 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 blah. So I'm trying to understand, how do we pass the test? Because we didn't really do anything. In other words, we're stuck in the feeling. He gave us the insight. We felt better for the second. Okay, Hashem, I'm ready. I can handle the test, which is, again, the thought he gave me. I could choose not to maybe, you know, take that thought seriously, fine. But at some level, my will of I want to serve Hashem and I want to pass the test and I want to see its thought, that is definitely has to be there. I'm just trying, based on what you were saying, I'm trying to understand how we pass a test, because we don't really have much to do with the thought process. In other words, right, like he has to give us all the thoughts, the despair, the helpful, the unhelpful, right? Like, and even when I'm good and I'm like, great test, I had so many times where I had amazing insights and I was like, okay, I could do this. And then 5 minutes later, I'm crying again. And I'm like, what? Like, I just said, so I know it's thought. I'm just based on what you're saying. Where are we passing a test? You understand? Where's our role in this test?
Yeah. Well, you know, we touched on, you know, this is, I think, gets back to a little bit of the beauty and the mystery of free will. That
we just don't know.
What's that?
I'm saying that we just don't know where the free will lies. Like, I realize
I just don't know
where my free will is.
You know, let's say you get that hit of sadness again, and you just had an insight. You can handle this. It's you and Hashem inside out. And then all of a sudden you're hit with this, you know, reactive feeling of I can't handle it, crying, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, your moment to moment insight doesn't obviously change the fact that you're still living on, you know, in the experience of the gift of thought in this moment. And you don't always see it in the look. What I see is that I don't always understand or see insightfully the nature of a test until I'm kind of licking my wounds an hour later. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't always see it in the moment, and I'm gripped by pain and upset in a given moment, and I can't sense any clarity of inside out. But I know that but inevitably I end up settling down and then having some recognition of, oh, that was a contraction, you know, that was a test.
Do we care if we pass the test? I feel like I always want to pass the test, but maybe I'm not going to know if
What's your definition of passing the test?
So I think that's the question. I don't think I have the correct one, because to me it's like I'm happy to serve Hashem, and I'm happy, and I'm happy, and I'm happy, and then I'm not happy. So then I feel like, shoot, I didn't pass the test. Maybe the definition of passing a test isn't to be happy about what's going on. I don't know, but I think
I would,
maybe
I would
the definition isn't correct. Right.
Yeah, I don't know, you know, I don't always, I would say that
what
definitely
would the definition
happiness
be?
Has...
What is the definition of happiness?
Yeah, happy feeling is not, I'm sorry, let me let you go ahead. What do you want to say?
In other words, do we know the, because every story you hear about a tzaddik or about a person is this, and then he was so happy to, right, and he realized it was from Hashem, and he's happy that he lost $1 million because he kept Shabbat. And I'm like, yay, I want to be happy that I'm right, like, and maybe for a minute I am. But then inevitably my thoughts go to where I don't want them to go. What if, and maybe I shouldn't have, and maybe I should have, and oh no, like... So is the test passing that one moment of joy when you really felt it?
No. your visibility is coming and going. You know what I'm saying? Your visibility is coming and going. And let me share with you a story from the Talmud that illustrates this beautifully. So the great sage Abaya He was a great, you know, the, like, he, like, we don't even know who and what these people were. But Abaya was overheard a man and a woman saying, let's wake up early in the morning and leave town where we can at least accompany each other along the way for our journey, for part of the way. So Abaya was worried that maybe they would come to, you know, to make a mistake, being in seclusion, the two of them on their own. So he woke up early and he proceeded to follow them. And then they got to a fork in the road, and Abaya and the man said, okay, well, this is as far as our travels, you know, our shared travels lead us, so see you later. And they left, and there was no impropriety, there was no problem. So when Abaya looked at that, he said, well, on the one hand, I'm grateful he didn't do anything, but on the other hand, he had this, like, halisha sadas. He had this great, great discouragement. Why? Because he saw in himself, he said of himself, I couldn't have handled that test. If I was on the road and I was by myself with this woman, I would have come to inappropriate behavior. That's what Abaya said of himself, and he became very discouraged. So when he shared that with, I guess, one of his contemporaries, one of his, either his Rebbe or his one of his contemporaries, the contemporary said to him, don't worry, Abaya. Kol ha-godol me-chavero, anyone who's greater than his fellow, yitzro godol he-menu. The power of his yitzhara, the power of his inclination toward illusion, is greater than his fellow as well. So when Abaya heard that, he was comforted. He was comforted. He realized that the presence of this force within him that's not personal, that's directed by God, the force of the Yetzirah that is the force of concealment, the force of confusion that is being directed within us by God moment to moment, it is simply a force that's greater in him than it is in other people. And he was comforted by that. Oh, it's not personal. It's not like I should feel so ashamed and discouraged by the fact that I can sense I might have gotten lost in that episode where this other guy didn't. So what do we see? That Abaya, as great a man as he was, it became hidden from him the truth about the inside-out nature of life, and then he woke up to the truth of the inside-out nature of life. That's the nature of tests, is that you will wake up to the reality of the inside-out nature after having already entertained and stepped and walked in the shoes of an outside-in nature. That's part of it. And part of it is, you know, the temptation, as we've discussed many times. The Yetzer comes and he shakes us, and we get shaken up because that's the way it works. The Almighty directs the flow of this Yetzer Hara thinking inside of us, and we feel shaky. And then right after the shaky feeling inhabits us, the accuser comes and says, wow, you are such a shaky person. What's wrong with you that you're so shaky? And that's exactly what happened to Abaya. And Abaya was comforted by saying, you got shaken because the Almighty directs the force of the Yetzer within you, and it's not personal. Why don't take it personally. You got shaken up, and now you're seeing that being shaken up is something that God is directing moment to moment to moment. So that's what I see, that the free will is not the ability to stand in an inside-out nature at all times. It's at the moment it becomes visible to us that we got lost, we acknowledge that we got lost, and it's not personal that we got lost. But getting lost is, it seems, a part of the experience of the human process. Like, it's not possible not to have moments of lostness. And the choice of, in some sense, the test is what we, you know, whether we identify with the having gotten lost and take it personally, or we acknowledge the truth about God's directing, despite ourselves, a flow of confusing thinking through us.
So are we saying that, I mean, we're not giving a definition of test, but are we just saying that... I'm not sure what we're saying. I'm still caught on that.
Well, what I'm saying is that there is no choice but to inhabit lost states of mind at times. The Almighty is going to expose you, as we had someone describe in the call last week. You know, I feel like the Almighty dunks me in a bucket of insecurity, then takes me out, and then dunks me in a bucket of insecurity, then takes me out and dunks me. You're not going to be able to inhabit a life without getting lost. And in fact, that's a part of our job in this world, is what we do with the waking up point. You know, when we wake up from having gotten lost, what do we do with that? Do we...
Where does regret fit in?
Uh-huh.
If I didn't do it, why should I regret? I got lost because Hashem didn't show me the lie. Now I'm regretting. So why should I regret? That has to entail that there's some form of a choice there, or I wouldn't be required to regret. And I'm required to regret as part of the Teshuvah process.
You're asking such a beautiful question. Let me see if I'm understanding what you're asking. You're saying if a person falls into anger, into an angry, reactive moment, and just loses his control, and then wakes up to the reality, oh my gosh, I lost it. If he's going to say to himself, that's the Yetzer Hara, and that's the way the Almighty does things. The Almighty flows through insecure thought, and I get, you know, human beings are going to get lost. That's just how it works. Then how can there be a tshuva process for that angry, if assumedly I should take responsibility for the angry reactive thinking, and part of that accepting responsibility is to express regret, to experience a feeling of, or to experience the truth of regret about such a choice. Well, if I didn't cause the choice, if it's the Almighty that directed me if he zapped me with insecure feeling and thinking, then what exactly am I taking responsibility for? And I think that, you know, there's two aspects of our job in this world. The overall job of our responsibility to refine our character is independent of the conscious choice. Here's how I view it. Here's how I see it. I see it as if the Almighty, I've shared this message, this metaphor before. It seems to me that it's almost like I was parachuted down into this world in a way that I didn't exactly, I didn't choose the coordinates of where I landed, right? So given my nature, given my upbringing, given the influences in my life, I woke up at a certain point realizing I have a whole internal world that is filled with, you know, reactivity and negativity and, you know, disparaging feelings and things of that nature. I didn't engineer it. I didn't select these choices. But here I am confronted by the presence of these character traits and these habits. Well, I parachuted down into this territory. And my job is to find my way over to a distance away. You know, if I have to get to a certain, I have to get from point A to point B. So the presence of that Yetzer Hara, you know, that it's definitely the Yetzer Hara that's accounting for my feelings and my negativity, my reactivity. I guess it's not so much a harata of I'm personally to blame, I blew it. It's the harata of, God, I desire an alternative. I acknowledge that what's flowing through me are unrefined or insecure thinking. I acknowledge that what's present in my thinking and present in my living, my life, is insecure thought. And I acknowledge that I desire an alternative. And there's only one source that is accounting for the insecure thought, and there's only one source from where new thought can come from. You know, did the Jewish people who were placed in Mitzrayim, was it when they sought to refine themselves and to make themselves worthy of being redeemed, did it look to them that it was their fault that they got into Mitzrayim? It was a job. It was a national character refinement process. That's what it was. It was the Almighty placing them. Now, hi, but they had unrefined qualities that they possessed. You know, I don't know how to it doesn't make sense to me to view it as a personal failing on their part that they possess those unrefined qualities. The Almighty places us in this world in a manner that we are as yet unrealized potential. We are as of yet possessive of unrefined character. It's true the unrefined character is only possible because there's only one source behind everything, and that's divine thought. But I don't take it personally, and yet I still acknowledge, God, I want different. I'm willing to accept responsibility for the role I can play in turning to you. I'm not going to blame my spouse. I'm not going to blame my parents. I'm not going to blame, you know, whatever, as the source of my unrefined feelings and my upset feelings. I'm going to acknowledge that it's coming from you, and I can play a role in a partnership with you, God, by looking in the direction of you, in somehow becoming a portal for new thought. To me, that's what it's about. It's about seeing it as my job, but not seeing it as a personal reflection of failure.
Okay. So you're just more regretting that Hashem didn't give it to you yet. Not that...
You know, it's the pain. What is regret? Regret is not necessarily... Regret is the pain associated with having these unrefined and insecure thought habits. It's painful. It hurts. It's not helpful to my life and my relationships to to have these insecure thought habits, to view them as real and meaningful. And that is costing me. It's like I'm hemorrhaging life opportunities. I'm hemorrhaging the opportunities of life. Is it because I blew it? No, but it's still the case. You know, it's like somebody hires you to be the CEO of a new company. You look around and you see, oh, wow, there's total dysfunction here, and there's dysfunction here, and there's dysfunction here. I've accepted responsibility as the CEO of this company to identify where we're hemorrhaging and acknowledge and accept responsibility for addressing the hemorrhaging. Why do I need to do so? Because it's costing us. The essence of charata is the perception that this is costing me. And the alternative to charata, the alternative to regret is, okay, this is what people, you know, it's not that big a deal. Why do I need to really do anything? You know, charata is, the pain of charata is helpful in that it leaves us clear about the necessity of finding an alternative. About the necessity of not just staying put in a mediocre, you know, insecure world. And that's why I think that's to me what's coming out of this conversation right now, Melissa, is that charata is not a personal blame matter. It's simply an objective recognition. This is costing me. I want an alternative.
Okay. Thank you. I needed this.
You know what? That was very helpful to me, too.
Okay, good.
Yeah, that's a beautiful definition. It's a beautiful understanding of charata. Charata is the pure and simple recognition that this habit is costing me. It has nothing to do with shame and blame, which is, of course, the essence of the outside-in understanding, right? The essence of the outside-in mistake is synonymous with shame and blame. Pure charata is a simple objective recognition. Ouch! I am being held back from so many blessings in life because of this habit. What do I want to do about it?
Right. Yeah. Okay. Very good. Really. Thank you.
What else? Anybody else?
Hi, this is Sonia.
Hi, Sonia.
Hi. Well, I just wanted to ask more on regret, you know, what you were just discussing, because I also struggle with that a lot. And wouldn't it I'm constantly flooded with some form of, whether it's regret or blame, that sort of thing, you know. And wouldn't it mean that, like what you just said, oh, it's costing me, what can I do about it? Well, in my experience, whenever I find myself, oh, what can I do about it, I find that I can't really do anything about it. If something is, all I can do is pray. If it occurs to me, if I get the thought that I should pray, then I pray that I need to get out of this. Please lift me out of it. Mm. I've even had this thought come to me, lift me out of this. You know, what do you call in English this place where it's kind of like very wet, and if you stand, you begin to sink? Like a marsh?
Like quicksand or a marsh swamp. Or a swamp?
A swamp. Yeah, that's the word.
Yeah.
So I've even in the past, I would get a thought pop up in my head saying, Hashem, please pull me out of this swamp. I'm sinking. I don't know what to do. I really can't do it. I see that it's costing me. I see this is terrible, and I have no idea what to do and how to get myself out of it. I mean, all these psychologists and friends and advisors will say, well, you need to stop doing that, and you need to stop doing this, and you need to start doing this. You know, they'll give me a list of what I have to do, and I feel even more guilty and more regret that I know theoretically, but I don't seem to be able to do it. And when I look back at examples in my life when I would be in a swamp and then I would get out of it, I could never claim that, oh, yeah, I did it. It's my doing. I made a plan, and I accomplished every bullet point, and it's my doing, and I'm very proud. It was more of a, it just was taken away. Like the Nisayon was just suddenly taken away. I don't know how. It's just taken away. It became a non-issue. I stopped getting thought about it. You know? So when I wonder, like, regret, wouldn't it also be part of Yetzer Hara? Because if it comes with a bad feeling, I remember I think it was Rebbetzin Rosenblatt said, look for the feeling. She always looks for the feeling as a barometer. If it's a negative feeling, she knows where it's coming from. She knows where it's coming from. She knows its face. I know your name. And so when I get this regret that hurts so much, it's almost like debilitating. And then, isn't it also part of Yetzer Hara? So it's tricking me again. It's like, oh, I'm going to conceal myself and I'm going to make you feel bad about yourself. But I'm really, it's still dunking in the bucket in the form of regret. Like now it's dressed up as regret. Do you know what I'm saying? I'm not sure.
Absolutely.
I'm not even sure what I'm trying to say. But... You know?
No, I think what you're pointing to is the same. I think it's really consistent with what, you know, with what Melissa was sharing and inquiring about, which is that, you know, it's possible to get caught up in a way of viewing our ups and downs in a way that's accompanied by a shameful feeling, by a feeling of not just regret, but of what we might call, you know, shame and guilt. you know, and I think what you're, you know, and as you've described, you know, beautifully in these conversations, is that at a certain point you emerge, right?
Definitely. Yeah, it has happened.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it's a regular occurrence that you, as you described, you get, you know, the tsunami comes, and then the tsunami somehow recedes back to the depth, you know, back to the deep part of the ocean. And it's pretty reliable that that happens. And I think that is, you know, part of the learning curve here is gaining a little bit of a respect for that, how that, you know, we sometimes tend to get preoccupied with how poorly we are doing. You know, we're doing poorly. I'm doing poorly now. And we don't necessarily notice how we where our health is present, where our wisdom and, you know, where our resilience is also in presence. It's like the story I've shared in the past of, you know, meeting with this gentleman who was extraordinarily depressed. And when I asked him, so is it static or do you have ups and downs? He acknowledged that he had ups and downs, and the difference was quite great. You know, his ups, his downs were that he prayed at night that the Almighty not wake him up in the morning. That's where his downs. Like, he literally wanted to die. And that was a real feeling that he had. And his ups were, the way he characterized his ups were that he felt awful, but he had a desire to find a path forward. And, of course, that's quite a difference, right? And so when I asked him, so what accounts for those differences? Like, when do you go, what accounts for when you're in your up and when you're down? Like, do you do that? Do you opt into the down and then decide enough down, let's do the up now, you know? And what I was looking to point to him was the truth that there's a presence of the divine, there's a source, there's something behind his experience, there's something behind his thinking that is fascinating, that's awesome. And it'll lead us to take our eyes a little bit off of the feeling state we're in and a little bit toward the truth about thought, the truth about our experience. It's fascinating that you emerge from the bucket. You know, it's fascinating that you then go back into the bucket as if there was never anything other than the bucket. And that, the respect that we have for how that is so human, you know, how universal that is, how profound it is that we're experiencing that moving in and out of understanding. You know, that thought, new thought is showing up in a way that we can't account for, other than as something beyond us. That is, it seems to me, is there, and our feeling state is helpful. Our feeling state is a helpful tool, like you were pointing to. Our feeling state is a helpful barometer to help us to tune into the gift of thought, the fact of thought. So I point, you know, I'm looking to see in general how this is so much bigger than me. It's so much bigger than my life. You know, I'm on the receiving end of the divine flow that is most noticeable to me in the kind of flowing, you know, and non-static experience of my moods. But it's so much bigger than me. It's so much more than my life and my experience and my circumstances. There's this, you know, profound divine wisdom that's really what is being pointed to in all my little moments of overwhelm and reactivity. And, you know, I think just the acknowledgement, just this conversation that we're having, Sonia, just when, even just a moment's recognition of the truth behind your thought, as we've described, it's a tremendous mitzvah. It's a tremendous accomplishment. The ability to see and know, Lo yelucha Elohim acherim, I will not ascribe power to things other than the one source. I feel what I feel, but I know something about it. And, you know, it's funny, the conversations that I've been having with my son, this one that's been, you know, having his struggles with his reactivity, thank God I'm not experiencing him as a circumstance in the same way. I can see it. I can see that I mean, I still get surges of upset, but on the whole, I can see that the nature of my experience of him has softened, and I'm now in a place where I can be more helpful to him as a result. And I've requested of him that we meet weekly to have a conversation about this challenge, and it's very gentle. It's very gentle, and he's not, you know, he's not crazy about the meetings that we're having. But I my goal is to be very gentle and very simple. And really, we met last night, and at first he was like, I don't want to. I was like, come. We said we're going to meet weekly to have a conversation, And all I did was I said to him, so tell me, what is it that you understand to be the goal of this conversation? And he said, it's for me to realize that my experience, my upset is not coming from my siblings, it's not coming from my parents, and that I'm somehow responsible for what I'm going to do with that. And I was like, wow, you know, that was profound. I mean, just for him to acknowledge, now he's still getting angry at times, but there's some clue that he has that it's not his siblings or his parents or his whatever that's really the source of his his angry reactivity. There's a truth behind it. There's a truth. That's a tremendous accomplishment in the journey of our lives. The nisayon that we experience, again, you know, I started this conversation by saying a nisayon is the degree to which we're unaware of the inside-out nature of our life, where we have gotten lost in the illusion of outside-in. And the accompanying logic of that is blame and shame and running away. You know, that's the implications of the logic of outside in. I should be able to feel differently. I should be able to do differently. Blame, shame, run away. But any level of recognition about the truth of that, no matter what feeling state we're in, is 100% the journey of encountering a nisayon. It's 100% the avoda. It is the service associated with the experience of tests. And I can't help but notice that we're holding by 11 o'clock. So I want to thank everybody once again for listening, for indulging my meandering at times approach to looking at this pure, beautiful and precious understanding. And I look forward to receiving your comments or questions either by email at info@yourcenterforwellbeing or at 845-393-1529. And I think I'm going to stop the recording.